The following program may contain content that your kids would love to hear, but you may not want them to.
You're an interesting species, an interesting mix. You're capable of such beautiful dreams and such horrible nightmares. You feel so lost, so cut off, so alone. No, you're not. See, in all our searching, the only thing we've found that makes the emptiness bearable is each other.
Wolfman Jack on the Hallelujah Trail.
The Hallelujah.
And now, once again, I bring you the man of 2 hours, the man who appreciates me more than any automated voice on the internet, Frank Cottolo!
Okay, here we go.
Listening to Frank Cottolo.
It's that old devil called love. Gets behind me and
the term the lost generation was created by Gertrude Stein and popularized by Ernest Hemingway as the epigraph of his book, The Sun Also Rises. During the speakeasy decade of the 1920s, America was coming of age, developing an identity that was caught between the old-fashioned values of immigrant fathers and the growing materialistic aspirations of a younger generation. This greatly affected the writers of The Lost Generation, including F. Scott Fitzgerald, T.S. Eliot, John Dos Passos, and of course, Ernest Hemingway. The Lost Generation was comprised of expatriates who spurned the pre-war values of love, romanticism, optimism, prosperity, and hope. They were also cynical of the glitter and potential of the great boom of the 1920s, which they now saw as American and money-based, and therefore corrupt and insincere. Unable to reconcile themselves with their past beliefs and unwilling to accept those of their present mainstream society, the lost generation was left morally bankrupt and spiritually sterile, with only the fleeting pleasures of alcohol and sexual promiscuity as comfort.
Might as well give up the fight.
Serious writer is not to be confounded with a solemn writer. A serious writer may be a hawk or a buzzard or even a popinjay, but a solemn writer is always a bloody owl.
Ernest Hemingway, perhaps the most famous writer of the lost generation, popularized the term in his critically acclaimed book, The Sun Also Rises. The Sun Also Rises gave him international success and cemented him as a leader of the lost generation. Many of his books became Bibles for people who felt disillusioned with society and culture in the 20s. Themes in his books, including alienation, moral decay, and detachment, reflected the attitudes of the time. During his life, Hemingway published 7 novels, 6 short story collections, and 2 nonfiction works. In 1954, he won the Nobel Prize in Literature. His time spent fighting in World War I greatly affected his writing and formed the basis of his book, A Farewell to Arms. In this novel, he wrote of war, that it breaks everyone, and afterward, many are strong in the broken places, but those that will not break it, kills. It kills the very good and the very gentle and the very brave impartially. If you are none of these, you can be sure it will kill you too, but...
Okay, here we go.
Listening to Frank Cottolo.
Okay, here we go.
you will not be alienated. If you stay here with me, the Godfather of Internet Radio, the Bard of Broadcasting, I make no bones about any of this. I'm just here with you. So who the hell do you think you are? Today? Yesterday? What about your blood? How far back does that go? What generation are you belonging to, have belonged to, and will belong to? It's all right here with you and me. It's a drum solo Cotolo Chronicle. Cap to ice cap, from Hamlet to City, from Othello and into every bordello. Here we go again, my comrades, my friend, my camaraderies. It's me, Frank Cotolo, the man's name that joins the title of the show, Cotolo Chronicles. I'm chronicling, and I'm always finding something else in my head and my heart to be able to broadcast this show weekly, unless, of course, something happens. What happened last week? Nothing happened last week. We had a great show, and we'll have a great show next week. One of the more popular things I do here, and by more popular, I don't mean, you know what I mean, okay? This is no backslapping, self-backslapping. This is no mirror watching. This is no reflection upon me or whatever ego is driving me. It's just the way I say it and the way I mean it. So here's the deal. The deal is that many people tell me, you know, you have a lot of guests. We love it when you have guests. Our guests like it, too. It's once in a while we get a rotten egg, but that's just going to happen. It's the law of improbability, or maybe probability. The improbable, well, anyway. But here I am, a drum solo Cotolo Chronicles. That term, of course, was created by Mr. Kurt Brando, who is a guest now and then on this show. And he said, like a lot of people say, they say, hey, what are you going to do a show just by yourself? 2 hours? What are you, nuts? 2 hours all by yourself? Just you and a fan in the background? It's like you're some hermit in a cabin somewhere out there, which is where I really am out there, because there's, you know, nothing around me. A couple of groundhogs, possums. Every once in a while, I was thinking before, when I was looking out, before the sun completely went down and it was dark, I was saying, hey, I remember when I looked in my backyard and there were cows there. Cows! How did they get out of the field next to me? You know, should it be such a surprise that I look out and see cows? If there are cows that living right next to me, no, because they got through a hole in the back, or they decided to wander from their field, you know? So, you know, and they go, hey, dude, what are the cows doing there? You know, and I said it like that, like a jerk. But what I mean is, I shouldn't have been that surprised, because there's cows. If I go outside and I see cows next, sometimes 10, 12, 11 cows out there, not bulls, now cows. Cows are female, okay? Bulls are male. Bulls, the way I say it, bulls are male. So, if they live next door to me, why would I be fascinated that they're suddenly, I could see them out my window and they're in my yard? I shouldn't. I should not be. So what does that mean? That means it's me, Frank Cotolo. I'm here in the middle of nowhere, but yet we're somewhere. We're somehow connected because of this really strange and sometimes wicked medium that I have been attached to since they dragged me out of, well, I wasn't retired, but they dragged me out of whatever I was doing when I was done. I was doing what I did, and it was done doing it. And then they said, hey, come on in. Because now we have radio on the iNet. And so I came right here. It was many years ago, and I'm still here. And I got a drum solo, Cotolo Chronicles for you on this night. Night Live, unless they're playing it. I say playing it. I guess that would be they playing it. I guess there's not a digital term. They're playing it. Unless they're playing it as a lifelike program, which you can hear. You go to CotoloChronicles.blogspot.com. You'll find all the stations and some that don't even exist anymore. We've got to update that thing. If only I cared to spend time doing that. So I was thinking, well, I'm always thinking about the same thing. You know, over the course of, I don't know, let's say 20 years, over the course of like two decades or close to two decades, how much can actually come out of one person, right? So the themes I will talk about when I'm, when I'm with guests, it's obviously sometimes most of the time, people that have new things or products or movies or books or whatever they have that we talk about them and we talk about it, or a subject or a topic that's not necessarily new. New? Current. Current is the word I was looking to find, and I found it. But, you know, over the years, and my years, because I remember, you know, I go on this show in the beginning of the decade. Was it? Yeah. And, you know, things are happening, but I didn't come on we did some current things. It was a whole different show, and I'm not here to tell you the history of this show. It doesn't matter. What I'm saying is I've changed over the course of two decades. And yet there's lots of themes that have aged like wine inside of me. Now, the wine, and see, that was wrong. Now, the wine inside of me does not age. It passes through me. But what I mean, like wine ages, so the themes that I have brought to this microphone over the past two decades. Did I say two? No, to the past decade. Did I say two? Wait, it has to be two. Yes. Wow, that's amazing. How out of it I can be. And here it is. You can hear the fan, because who expected this to be so hot? Expecting a storm. Maybe we'll hear some great live or lifelike thunder. That's me. It's my show. If I want to do thunder with my mouth. So the theme I'm going to talk about, and the thing I'm going to look at now, because I've moved on, this thing about generations, because, well, you know, we're in a strange time. We're always in strange time. That's another thing too, okay? These people say, you know, these are strange times in our world. Well, you know, a world without strange times is strange. When this world doesn't have strange times, that's strange. Then they got it backwards. It's an inversion. So the other day I watched a couple of new movies. Did I tell you that? No, I didn't. I'll tell you that right now. So we're going to talk about generations, because we've had different generations listening to this show since I started. And right now there could be as many as one, two, well, I would say, well, I don't know. Yeah, there could be four generations. I mean, one representative from each, two, three, four. I'm not talking about those thousands of people. You know, eventually thousands of people hear this. But I don't grow an armor for things that should reflect off of me. They ferment. I don't even know if that's correct. They ferment. They mold. How about mold? They mold. So we're going to talk about the generations, and what I'm saying is this theme, I might have talked about this theme. I have talked about this topic before, but not in this particular way. Because, you know, I just took my headphones off. I'll tell you why. Because it's hot, even with the fan on. But I tend to overcompensate and want to talk louder if I don't have my headphones on. But the headphones get sweaty. and it drips down my ears to my lobe. So anyway, I'm watching. You know, there's a movie. Did this ever happen to you? Like what? This. You know, you see a movie's on the telly, or, you know, the cable telly, or one of the channels, or two of the channels, or whatever. You know, you see this movie, I don't know, like, the very title turns me off. I don't want to see it. There's a movie like that. It's called We Bought a Zoo. I don't know why they decided on that title. Perhaps that was the title of the book. It's from a book. And I should know that movies that are screenplays that are based on books tend to be have more depth, more themes, more flesh and more bone and more heart, if we want to humanize it, personify it as a piece of art. We'll get back to The Lost Generation. That's what I was going to tell you. That girl was talking about The Lost Generation. I'll get to that. But I saw this movie called, anyway, it's on, and I'm going, well, look, I don't know. I'll start. I don't know. What is this? We Bought a Zoo. It just doesn't sound good. I'm big on titles, okay? So, being a man who's written books and things like that, long stories, short stories, I said, you know, the last thing I would do if I was going to write a book, I said, you know, I got an idea for a book. It's called We Bought a Zoo. And so I, you know, it's very unfair to judge it. Hey, wait a second. I'm judging a book by its cover. I'm judging a book by its title. But that's not right. You shouldn't do that. But I do it, and we all do it. We all have our own little, what, find the word now. It's like a quiz show. You have 5 seconds to find the word. We all have our... That's lost. I can't find it. So anyway, I hear that. I hear, because I never watched it. Here's a little... And Matt Damon. Gosh darn it, Matt Damon just shows up everywhere. Even today. You see, it happened again today with another movie. So all these movies, I'll tell you about that if I remember after this We Bought a Zoo thing. Which just leads me to something that's absolutely absurd. My point being that I start watching this and it's like, well, hey, wait a second. It started off well. It's setting itself up. There are characters. And there's no sign of a zoo in the beginning. So I'm like, well, where is this taking me? I didn't read the book. I don't even know if the book was a hit. I didn't look that up. I don't do as much research as I used to do on many things that I want to know. Because I apparently don't want to know them that strongly. So I don't look. So we bought a zoo. Who's we? And why you, what are you buying? But anyway, it starts off and it has some spirit to it. Now, I've told you this before and I'll tell you this again. If you haven't heard it, you'll hear it now. When it comes to a book or a TV show or a movie or a play, anything, even a short story. If I am not captured, I like that word because I think it really does count. If I'm not captured by the story, the characters, the way it's going, whatever, in the first, I can give it 10 minutes. You can't do that with a book because you don't know how quickly you will read. But let's say a movie, if I'm not, I'm gone. I'm out. Goodbye. I know people who do with books. They said, oh, God, I just read a book and I hated it. And I said, well, when did you start to hate it? When you were reading it? Oh, God, I just hated it. I'm reading it. But it's questions come up and I went, I got to see how this ends. So you read it. How could you do that? I couldn't do that when I thought I had the time because I was younger. You know, I couldn't do it. I just forget it. The book doesn't hit me, and my assessment of it, what word were we looking for? I forgot the word. So anyway, so we bought a zoo. Can eventually works. It eventually works. even with Matt Damon, I don't dislike Matt Damon. I just don't, I don't get why he's everywhere. I don't, certain things I don't like. That the Bourne series, I tried to watch that, I couldn't, but that was my point. I watch these things, and I'll give it 10 minutes, tops, 15, I don't know, you know, I mean, I don't know, it could fall at any time, and it's gone, that's it, goodbye, that's it. But this one turned me off from, and that's not fair, from the beginning, for a long time. I don't know when it was made, but I mean, maybe it was made like 6-7 years ago, but I'm like, I'm just looking at the title, I see what's on now, and there's this, there's that, there's this, there's a little movie, We Bought a Zoo. By the way, and then, now, because of that, this is what happens with me, and I play these games. See, it's all games. And in the games, I find enjoyment. In the enjoyment, I find life. Okay? Yeah, that's the way it goes. So, and that was not, you know, since the day I was born. I tried to do that when I was very young, but that generation wouldn't hear of it. When I was in another generation... And I was in a kid generation. Okay. So We Bought a Zoo. Anyway, it's okay. Good movie. Textbook script. Fine. All right. I know where it's going. I see the posts. Act one, act two, act three. It goes in, it comes back, it goes in, and it's picture perfect. It's just perfect. But it's nothing particularly new to me. And drama isn't. I think that's why we enjoy certain types of drama, because it does, and we know it's going to satisfy, we know it's going, you know, and that's the job of the writer. Okay, fine. So I decided, and I got, you know, I started playing a game while I was eating later on that day after I watched We Bought a Zoo. And realize I could have done the, and this is, these are things I do, and I don't know why, I don't know what I'm going to do with them. I have composition books all over the place with notes I've made and things I've done, and it, and I'll work at it, I just do it. So I came up with a couple of other, We Bought a Zoo. I said, well, you know, there could be a, what if the same family that bought a zoo and went through this movie, What if they decided to do something else in the next adventure of this family? So if it was like a sequel and a sequel, sequel, like make it a series, okay? So in the next series is called We Rented a Hospital. I have to leave those pauses so that you either laugh or don't laugh. Okay, so the first one is We Bought a Zoo. Then that family moves on. This is what I do in my head. I just write, like, what? So We Rented a Hospital. It would be no different in style. It would just be a hospital. It would be no different in style or dramatic content or dramatic posts. First, okay, we just go. Then, now then that's over with. And that, over with? No. That goes, that's over. Where does with come from? That's over with. I just realized another one of those phrases that shouldn't exist. That was over with. Over with what? It was over. Well, that was over. So we moved on to the next one. They said, you know, we made some money on that one. On We Rented a Hospital, not as much as we bought a zoo. Let's do another one. Okay, fine. So then I got to get into my head and I go, okay, now the family, which consists of the father and now a new girl, because the original mother had died and she was part of the We Bought a Zoo. And then the another one who worked on the zoo, maybe she left. Maybe she stayed at the zoo when they moved on. I don't know. Maybe she went with them. But then anyway, next one, after we rented a hospital, said, okay, I got it. Now the same family, here they go. And it's called We Put a Down Payment on a Circus. Here's the series. Now you see the series? You see how this is going? This is what I'm doing in my head. Constantly stories and things and titles. I wouldn't have watched it if I didn't like We Bought a Zoo. Now, because I liked We Bought a Zoo, obviously, I would watch We Rented a Hospital. You know, the family that bought a zoo sells the zoo and moves on into another professional endeavor. That was We Rented a Hospital. The family that rented a hospital that had bought a zoo sells the hospital or gives it or donates. How about donates the hospital to needy doctors, doctors who can't get work or something, and nurses, and they move on. And because they donated, they don't have so much money. So they put a, we put a down payment on a circus. Ah, the family that, that ran the zoo. They ran the zoo. And then they worked at the hospital helping people. Now they just put a down payment with what money they had left. We put a down payment on the circus. Can you imagine people walking around going, did you say we put a down payment on the circus? Oh my goodness. It was so good. So good. The family that puts a down payment on a circus doesn't buy the circus. They stop at one particular point, take the money that they've made so far. They somebody else picks up the mortgage of the circus. And the next chapter in this movie series begins. It's called We Leased a Rodeo. We leased a rodeo. The family that bought a zoo and then rented a hospital and then put a down payment on a circus leased a rodeo. Oh, I loved we put a down payment on a circus. I know it was a little thin. And Damon, you know, I think, and then you know what happens in the movies? Okay, Damon goes, I'm not playing that part anymore. So they give it to somebody else, right? So someone else takes it over and he plays it because the characters are now so, they're so set, you know, that you could do this format with anything. So We Leased a Rodeo has a new family, because the kids are getting big too because they're making these movies. So they try one more. After that, so maybe somebody in that script, maybe somebody is hurt in the rodeo. Maybe one of the kids who's growing up or whatever, or he decides to stay at the rodeo or whatever, and the family moves on without him, because certain things have to change as you move this thing on, right? And then the final one, at least the final one that I thought about doing in the series is we took a timeshare on a carnival. We took a timeshare on a carnival. It originally said, God, that's terrible. We took a timeshare on a carnival. Well, by that time, of course, it was getting one star. It originally started with four stars, and it got three, and then two, and then one. That's it. Goodbye. The series is done. And they live forever happily. With the carnival, traveled around town. See, these are the things I do when all the other things I have to do are done. My name is Frank Catola, man whose name joins the Tyler Show. Anyway, if you get a chance to see, you know, you might want to do that though if you want. Oh, look at that. Just, that was a big sound. I think I tapped, I peeked, what is it called? Let's think. Clipped. Thank you. I found that one. I clipped. These are things you might want to do if you have fun with these things. It's a game. It's a mind game. And I'm going to tell you this much. These kind of games, these kind of mind games, these kind of things, all right, they have proven can help you not get Alzheimer's. Or if you're from New York, Weisenheimer's. I'm picking out, kicking out all the jokes now. I'm just, you need some new material, Frank. Well, there's the I Bought a Zoo, fun thing. Now we're going to talk about this misnomer of, generations. As I get older and as I get involved with other generations, which is, I guess, it has to happen. Right? Because you're going to be around, you're going to get older, but you're not always going to be with your own generation. And those of you who may have listened over the years know how I feel about my generation. You know, I mean, not exactly the way a lot of people feel about their generation. And I have my problems with the generation, my generation. I do. And these guys right here. These guys. These guys, right? You hope you die before you get old. No, you don't. You are old. And they're still playing it. Yeah, this is a later version, but... I got my coffee. Mm. Oh yeah. So here they are, imagine they doing this now with only two guys. There's only two Who. There's only two Who members out there, right? So here they're doing this. What's it mean now? What are they talking about now, huh? They're in their 60s, so big deal, right? Why don't you all fade away? You're fading away. Don't try to dig what we all Yeah, I'm putting some of these things together here. All right. What do you say we? Okay. So you get the idea. You know, when the Who were doing that, they're baby boomer. No, you know the Who. They're not baby boomers. The Who. Oh, I get it again. What is that? Oh, listen to that. That is not what you do on radio. I tell you, I wish they would do it. No, the Who, they were a generation, what were they? They were, well, maybe they were baby boomers. It could be trads. Some of them could be trads, traditionals, or trads. I'm going to go through this list here and talk about it, but, well, in the beginning when I played this smart girl talking about Hemingway's The Sun Also Rises, which of course dealt with the lost generation. I'll play some more of it again for you, because that generation had its problems. And if you listen, I know you didn't listen before, I'll make you listen again to part of it. You'll notice that a lot of the stuff going on with that generation is not much different. It's like a play that with a new set. If you think about seeing a play, let's talk about, I'm not talking about novel, you don't do this. You don't reboot novels, you know, they don't go. In other words, somebody doesn't rewrite a novel the way they did when they do a book. Excuse me, like, you know, the set, you know, the fan blows the junk around. The junk goes into my mouth. I'm talking for 2 hours here, and it goes into my throat and my chest. They don't do with movies what they do with books. So there's 13 versions of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde in the movies. Well, there's that version, and there's the other version, but they don't do that with books. You know, they don't take the same book and rewrite it for another generation. Now, they do it with movies. They do it with movies based on books. It's like when they rebooted the James Bond series for Daniel Craig. They started it with Casino Royale. Casino Royale was the original book that introduced James Bond as a book. And then it became a stupid movie called Casino Royale, because it was just a dumb movie. And it wasn't even part of the main series, and then they made it again. They went back to the original source. That might be a bad example. The thing is that you don't do a book again. For instance, nobody has decided to write. Nobody writes. Listen, there's only one From Here to Eternity. Here's a book. All right, let's use that book. This is From Here to Eternity. And it's about a certain time, a certain place with certain characters. Now, nobody rewrites it. This is something we may want to think about here. And yet, as I said before, books, movies, books themselves are books too, follow certain patterns and they have certain themes and characters have to do this, that, and the other thing or whatever. Even experimental books have their forms and formats. And yet nobody rewrites it. So From Here to Eternity, imagine if somebody says, you know what, you're writing a book? Yeah, I'm rewriting From Here to Eternity. What do you mean you're rewriting it? You can't. First of all, the people who own From Here to Eternity and the guy who wrote it, I don't remember his name. I picked that book out of the clear blue sky, which is where you pick books. You go to, hey, I need a book. Well, why don't you just look out there in the clear blue sky and pick it out? So they don't do that with books. They do it with movies. Even though they never made another version of From Here to Eternity, let's think of one they did, okay? I got to think of one they did now. We're not going to use the James Bonds. No, don't use that. Don't use that. Let's use... what am I trying to do? Think of a book? Books aren't redone. They don't do books again. So what am I thinking about? Movie? Yeah. Hercules? I don't know. No, I don't think so. The original with Steve Reeves, that, Italian movie. Some movies are redone. Some movies aren't. Some movies are like, some movies, they are remakes in another way of a movie with a different title. I'm confusing the hell out of you now. I know it. All I'm saying is this. A book comes out, Valley of the Dolls, huh? How about that one? Imagine someone saying, I'm going to rewrite Valley of the Dolls. Well, you can't rewrite it. It's a book. It's there. It was about, no, I'm going to rewrite it. And it just dawns on me, as these things do, while I'm actually doing this show, as opposed to virtually doing the show, why is that? Why does someone rewrite Ben-Hur? You can do that nobody does that even to, as a parody. That's Mad Magazine still doing that. Mad Magazine doing the parodies of books and they do of movies. I've gotten myself into one of those areas where I'm bouncing off the walls because there are so many different aspects to this of what I'm talking about. Nobody rewrites books. Oh, I know what I was going to say. When they say, like, you take real people and then, like they did with Pride and Prejudice. The Jane Austen book, Pride and Prejudice, was rewritten. See, so this is what I mean. They rewrote it. It's called, but they added zombies. Now, this is the only situation that I know about where books are rewritten. And this is a very recent thing. Someone who started that zombie thing, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. So they rewrote Pride and Prejudice and ruined it. Well, okay, like, you're allowed to do that. It's all right. If it was funny, it was funny. I'm just not into zombies. Hey, I'm making... Sometimes I'm like a kid, you know? I get distracted by these little things I can do on the side. Like watching We Bought a Zoo and then writing in my head. So, Pride and Prejudice was not rewritten until it was rewritten and called Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. And there was another one. What was the one before that? They started this particular genre of adding zombies to classics, rewriting the classics with zombies in it. So it's the same characters as the original books, but it's different. So now they can do that, and they have started to do that, but nobody ever did without adding zombies or ghosts or anything. Nobody ever said, well, I'm going to write To Kill a Mockingbird again. Right, it's like, what do you do? Do you update it? And oddly enough, because we're talking about generations and people, you could update To Kill a Mockingbird and use the characters and bring them into, you could do it. Because there's still that problem. All right? It took whatever her name, I forgot her name. It took her, how many years? 40, 50 years to Watchmen, grab a Watchmen, buy a Watchmen, get a watch, get a Timex, whatever it was called, to write the sequel to that book. But it's a sequel to that book. And the original writer wrote the sequel. This is not like I'm talking about. So if you want to think of, rewriting something, I think you have to use something, first of all, that doesn't have the copyright. Jane Austen, I'm sure, is public domain now. So, we should start a company. Let's do this. Here we go again. Another idea that I just toss out there, and I don't know what happens to it. I'm not going to do this, but someone else may want to do this and then make $1 zillion or nothing. You'll break even, lose money, or make a lot of money. Those are the three things that will happen to you if you take this idea to the next level. Let's say you get a book like, let's say, Frankenstein. Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. How about, is that public domain? I think so. If you go to like Bookmasters, Bookbusters, or these other book, you know, they said the classics, they have a little section, and thank goodness they have reprinted these things in beautiful little bound copies not just paperback, or, you know, the spine breaks. I'm talking about in hardcover. And you can buy the classics. And these little air, these are the classics, you know. Robinson Crusoe now. Well, look. Castaway was Robinson Crusoe, although there was no Friday in it. There was a Friday in it. Look at this. Robinson Crusoe, the guy gets lost, and then he meets I don't know how he meets someone on the island. I don't remember how that happened. Why didn't we ask a question like to the teacher when she said, hey, here you read the book, here it is, it's called Robinson Crusoe, he gets shipwrecked on an island, and he's walking around, and there's a book, so he doesn't have to talk to anyone, he's writing, if it is, it's gotta be for, I don't even remember if Robinson Crusoe was first person or third person or I don't know. But he meets a guy. He meets another guy. And the guy's a dark guy. He's an African American, but we don't know if he's from Africa. We don't know. You know, in those days it was different. If you think about Castaway was Robinson Crusoe. In a certain aspect, a man who gets lost on an island, but he's lost on the island, and what does he creates a man, because he can't find a guy and give him a name. Like in Robinson Crusoe, he found a guy. I don't know how that guy got there. There's only one other guy on the island. I don't remember. I was a kid reading this thing, and I didn't like Robinson Crusoe. I didn't like the book. Okay, but here is this guy, Robinson Crusoe. He finds another guy, and he names him Friday. Because he found him on a Friday. Apparently, he was keeping track of the days when he crashed, shipwrecked, and as it went on. He thought it was Friday. Maybe the guy's real name was Tuesday, or it should have been Sunday, because he was off. Maybe he was off, counting the days. I don't remember, and I would question that, but Don Duluth, or whatever his name had been, who wrote it, Daniel Duluth? I don't remember. But if you think about the movie Castaway, it is Robinson Crusoe in another way, but it's not called Robinson Crusoe. And it's different. And because there's no Guy Friday, there's no Friday. He doesn't meet anyone else human. He makes up somebody out of a ball, a Wilson soccer ball. Remember, he makes a face. If you've ever seen the movie, if you haven't seen the movie, and you're listening to this, you're going, I don't know, I haven't seen the movie. You've got to go see the movie Castaway, and you have to know the book Robinson Crusoe, or have seen the movie version of the book Robinson Crusoe, in order to understand anything I'm talking about right now. A man, unless you want, is a man shipwrecked on an island, and Castaway, he plane wrecked on an island, and in Castaway, he has to find somebody to talk to. So he makes this person up just so he keeps his sanity, because he talks to people. He doesn't have this sense of loneliness that drives him out of his mind, even though he almost commits suicide in the story. Okay? Wilson! He creates this guy, calls him Wilson. Now, the guy in Castaway, the Tom Hanks character in Castaway, does not have a very good imagination, because he finds these scraps that came off the plane, which was a FedEx plane, came off the plane. I imagine, you know what I was thinking? I wonder if FedEx said, hey, you know, we don't like that movie. Can't you just make up a fake name? Because this, you know, it's going to crash. This plane, FedEx plane crashes. Everybody dies except the Tom Hanks character. So I guess they sanctioned them and said, okay, be our guests. Why not use FedEx? I wonder if FedEx and UPS fought over, does UPS have planes? I don't even know. How about, Virgin Airlines? I don't know. Who else uses, gets packages and sends them? I don't think United Parcel Service does that. I just wonder if there were like bidding wars in that movie. We're going to make a movie where they take all these overseas, you know, use planes to ship all these pieces of mail, and FedEx just run up and go, FedEx will get great advertising, because everybody will know FedEx, just like they do in movies. When you see in movies a guy is in a kitchen and you see Coca-Cola, that's product placement. Coca-Cola has paid and helped to produce the movie and paid so that that can of soda in that scene is Coca-Cola, not 7-Up or Royal Crown or anything else. They paid for that to be there. So I wonder if FedEx said, I wonder if they said, maybe Castaway, I don't know the people who made it. I don't know what the story about it. Maybe those people made up a fake airplane. A fake delivery place. Maybe they made a fake delivery place. And the name, maybe it was called Federal, maybe it was called the Global X or something, right? And FedEx said, no, we'll pay for some of this movie if you use FedEx as the company plane for the movie in Castaway. And they went, you sure? Because, yeah, we don't, you know, and then FedEx paid them to show how one of their planes that flies across an ocean crashes, not of its own, because of problem with it, because it's a storm. It gets into a storm and it crashes. Now, this is not to say that, that if you send something FedEx and it's got to go across the ocean, your stuff is going to wind up in the ocean, or just drift ashore and be made into a human. Man, this, you know, who sends a soccer ball in a FedEx to another country? Who does that? Plus, he finds ice skates because he performs his own dental, maneuver, when he has a impacted tooth, right? He takes his tooth out with a blade from now who sends ice skates overseas? Who does that? It's a soccer ball. They can't. I gotta send him something. He lives over there in England. And, I think I'll send him a soccer ball. That's a Wilson soccer ball. I wonder if Wilson, wait a second, there's something else. Wilson, I wonder if that's product placement. We gotta find these things out. Don't you know? We're watching these movies and we're seeing these things. Well, anyway, he wasn't very inventive. Because he called the ball Wilson, because it's a Wilson ball. Wilson make the soccer ball. That's the name of the company. He calls it Wilson. Well, he's an ordinary guy. They didn't want, you know, he's always like, you know, they don't want. I mean, that's the problem I have. You know, I would sit there and I would go, I said, maybe he'll call, as he sat there, I'm writing the script, as he sat there, realizing that there was no one to talk to, and that state of mind could drive him insane. He looked at the soccer ball and he said, Egbert, I'm going to call you Egbert. Let me think of a name I like, because that's a name I got to use to talk to this fake thing so that I don't go crazy. But he just takes the name right off of the brand name, Wilson. Now I'm wondering if Wilson, who makes the sport products, basketballs, baseballs, soccer balls, whatever the heck other balls they make, jock straps, bats, right? I don't know, baseballs, ping balls, ping pong balls. I don't know. But I wonder if Wilson paid for that, or if Wilson got themselves free. And that's fascinating. But that's a business thing, okay? That's a business thing. It's part of Hollywood. It's a Hollywood business thing. So it doesn't have anything to do with what we were talking about. What I'm trying to say, and what I did say before, is that Robinson Caruso, you know, I remember people saying Caruso, like K-R-E-W-S-O, Caruso? No, it's C-A-R-C-A-R-U-O-U-S, it's Caruso. Not like, is it the same Caruso as the guy who sang? The opera guy, Caruso. Caruso. So wait a second, it just dawned on me now that Robinson Caruso was Italian? Because Caruso was the famous opera guy. But Robinson Caruso, can you imagine an Italian's first name is Robertson? Robinson? Hey, that's okay. We got a lovely little boy now. What are we going to name him, Marie? Hey, why don't we name him a Robinson? Robinson, that, you crazy? You don't name, Italians don't name kids Robinson. Not even now in this generation. I know we haven't even talked about the generations. I've gone off into this, but people don't rewrite books. That's where it came from. But you see, well, this is really neo-postmodernism. This is where we wound up. We wound up again in something I've talked about time and time and time and time and time again. I did not say it that many times, but I did. Oh, my goodness. It's a drum solo, my friends. What is a drum solo? This. As we're going to be going into our second hour, Neo. What second hour? The second hour of me, Frank Cotolo, Cotolo Chronicles. A man whose name adorns the title of the show, Cotolo Chronicles. And so shortly I'm going to do that thing I do in the middle, which is like, hey, here's something to remind you. This is where we are at the moment here. Cotolo Chronicles. You see, when I think... And I do, as I'm thinking, I don't set up what I'm going to do for the show. In fact, you know what I had here, too? See, I move along. It's move along. It's totally existential. We're going to talk about the Lost Generation and the other generations again, okay? So that's fine. And we'll go into it because we got plenty of time. It just went off to this because it does somehow have something to do. Somehow have something to do with the something I'm going to talk about. I was thinking of doing the Dada News. I did the Dada News a while back, and then what happened? I was going to do it again, but we had guests, and this happened, and that happened. Then I wasn't on for a week. Then it was on the road. Holy Christmas, it never, ever ends. Okay, I got this, and I got fun. Woo! Thank goodness it doesn't end. Anybody wants that list again? The list of the books that follow in the series... Ignited by We Bought a Zoo. Just write to me. And you can write to me anytime you want. Cotolo Chronicles. I'm at where? fcotolo@yahoo.com. You can get me there. I have a Gmail. Should I give out the Gmail too? What's the difference? The Gmail is where I get these incredibly weird things. You don't get weird things. We all get weird things. Email and what have you. We'll talk about the other generations. And what generation are you? A lot of people get this confused. Look, can we go back to the book thing for a second? Why can we? It's my show. Of course we can. I'll do it. When you go back to the show, the book show, the book thing. So that's it. So but nobody ever wrote Robinson Caruso. You know, you could put the two, maybe Dan Defoe. Willem Defoe is the actor. Defoe is the name of the guy who wrote Robinson Crusoe. Now, no one has done Robinson Crusoe again. Nobody does books again. Nobody wrote. I mean, but how do you do it? No, you could do it. But you can't do it because of, as I said, public domain. So, you know, it's terrific study. If you want to, like, you know, I want to write a book. Someone goes, I want to write a book. I want to learn how to write a book. Instead of going through these people who sell these, you know, plans. Want to write a book? I'll tell you how to write a book. You do this, 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 and this, and this. You should find a book, or maybe find a novella, a short book that you like, and then rewrite it. And that's good practice. I'm not telling that's the book you should write, because, you know, people get very, you know, anyone who tells you, you're not going to write a book, I never wrote a book, I know everybody can write a book, and I've told you this before. No, now everybody does not have a book in them, and nobody can write a book. I mean, not everybody, not nobody can write a book. Obviously, they can. Nobody can rewrite a book unless it's public domain and you put a zombie in there. Maybe, I don't know, you could do that if in a public domain. So you want to think of some books like that and do it. It's a good way to learn how to write a book because you got to know the original source. Or you could take a story, and yet you don't need a public domain to take the story of one book or a classic and make it another book or make it another piece. That's what I'm talking about with Robinson Caruso, and Castaway. And I'll bet you when they was, forget about the other stuff, the product placement, I don't know. That just happens to be a very particular movie that had that stuff in it, but I don't know about pitching it or how they pitched it. But somebody probably said, this is a modern day Robinson Crusoe. When they were pitching that story, because I know that was not from a book. Was it? No, I don't think so. Castaway, I don't think was from a book. Probably an original screenplay. And I'll bet when they were selling it, because they want to sell it to producers or people putting up money, or to the movie company, if they still do that with major studios. I don't even know if there are major studios. But someone said when pitching it, it's a modern day Robinson Crusoe. I guarantee you that. But it's a plane. Is that a ship? Plane wrecked, shipwrecked, and he doesn't meet a person, because, you know, they do go Castaway and he meets a native. This would not have been well taken anywhere. And how did he get there? Another plane? And he happened to live there? No. So he just, you know what he does? And this must have been difficult to pitch when he tells the people, the possible producers. And so what he does is he makes friends with a soccer ball and he names it Wilson because it's Wilson. They must have went, there's the door, Mr. Maniscalco. The first name that comes to my mind is the name of a shop teacher in junior high school, Mr. Maniscalco. Caruso. I never knew anybody named Caruso except for Enrico Caruso, and I didn't know him, but the famous Italian opera singer who was played. God, we did that too. Did we ever do that? The show? I don't know. And why am I asking the fan? Just sitting here. Because it's just me and my drums. We're going to talk about Generations, the Lost Generation, when we come back in a moment. And that moment will happen after. How's our stream time? Yeah, we're coming up to 30 seconds and we'll have been doing this for an hour. My name is Frank Atolo. Man, his name is doing the title show. You want to email me? You can email me. You want to write my book? You'll go rewrite my books. Yeah, we've got to buy them first and read them. Novellas available on Amazon and short stories available at Lulu and Blurb.com. At Blurb.com, of course, the Molotov Memoirs pair of books with T. Stephen Gesick designs and original artwork. Stuff that will be worth money. And again, I tell you, it's time to buy these books now while they're still inexpensive and Amazon, and they're still right. And do it now. I'm just telling you this without giving anything away, because there might not be anything to give away, but I'm telling you, it could be dangerous. Buy them now, they're cheap.
The Dole of Kron hosts the internet talk show from the Neo Host Modern World.
Of course, radio. Shut up. Darn Windows Media Player. Now, what is that? Oh, I know. I got to put myself louder. I'll hear myself. There you go. I can hear myself louder so that I understand. Radio, dead. Dead. Hey, you know, absolutely unbelievable how many people are doing radio this way now. I went to, and I don't know why I went there. I went to Talk Jockeys. Is that what it is? Talk Jockeys? Wow. What a host of, what a menu. Who listens to all that stuff? Who listens to any of that stuff? It's hard enough for me to get anyone listening to me. Who listens to that stuff? Holy Christmas. I don't know. It's, I didn't mean to advertise them. Talk Jockeys. Because it's like, what? Radio itself, though, brick-and-mortar radio, dead. Dead. I mean, what's there? That's a, we'll go back to that when Jiggy Jaguar's around. Jiggy Jaguar. Jiggy Jaguar. Who's probably on right now, but we're not going to go talk to him. Heck with that. Here's what I want to talk about. I want to talk about the lost generation. Let me go back in case you didn't hear it before. To this particular thing, I'll play a little bit of this again, and then I'll talk about it. I wonder if I'm just thinking there, though. Should I do this? Let's do this. Let me do this first before I play this Lost Generation piece by Of Wings and Things. I don't know what it says. That's what it says. Of Wings and Things. That's YouTube. Everything's on YouTube. And it's like, what? You know, got a radio thing? No, it's fine. Here we go. We got millennials, 2000, people born 2000. They're now, what, are they in the 17, 18? Okay, they're getting to be legal. Millennials. Okay, here's where it goes. It starts with the trads, T-R-A-D-S, trads. These would be, now, then I my trads from 1928 to 1944, the trads. And I don't think a lot of these trads are around. Because I know that my parents were not trads. Actually, one of them was a trad. I'm sorry. One of the name of my new book, one of my parents was a trad. And one of them wasn't. Was it possible that my father was 18 years older than my mother? That's impossible. This is wrong. I could do this math here. Wait a second. 13, 18. How does that work? Zero, that's one. Nine and nine is 18. Nine becomes an eight. That goes to 110. Eight. I did the math so incorrectly. It says that my father's 89 years older than my mother. It didn't work that way. I did it the wrong way. You put the big number on top and the little number on the bottom, right? One. It's true. That's it. Who does it? All of this, I've been adding things into all my life, right? But I don't do it with a computer or even a hand computer. I do it on paper, and I do it the wrong way, the incorrect way. My father, it's hard to believe that that's amazing. Here I know you. My father's 11 years older than my mother? How is that possible? Wow. What a thing to find out when I'm older than both of them. And they're deceased. What a thing to find out. Holy moly, something's wrong with that. I'm going to have to do research on that later. I might have my mother's birth date incorrect. Okay, well, trads. Okay, so trads, 1928 to 1944, the generation are called trads. That's going to be the generation we're going to talk about. Is that the lost generation? That is the lost generation. Okay, we're going to talk about the lost generation, or their trads, or the short for traditional. But of course, today, the generation that is writing about generations uses the term trads, the traditionals, 44, okay? Then the baby boomers come along. That's and my generation, and of course, a lot of my listeners. 1945 to 1964 are the baby boomers. That's named baby boomers because after the Second World War, all of the guys that were still alive, the soldiers, went home after the war. They weren't soldiers anymore. And they either had wives waiting for them, and they knocked them up, or they got they got married, and then they had children. So that's where all this and all these crazy creeps like me came. There was a boom of babies, therefore the baby boomers. Okay. From 1965 to 1979, which is 14 years. Did I do that correctly in my head? Because that's Generation X. Generation X. After 1979, 1980 to 1994, Generation Y. And that's just Y, the letter, not the word. Generation Y. From 95 until, and I don't know, millennials are, I don't know, what are millennials? Do they start in 2010? I don't know. But anyway, it says here Generation Z, 95 on, and it says on because it doesn't have millennials. From 95, I guess, to 2000, it's only 5 years, that generation? That's wrong. Oh, man. Because you got to do, when you're doing research on the internet, you got to go to three or four sources because there's slop, there's things that are incredibly incorrect. You know, there's bad history and bad education and bad, anyway, the trads are coming from the lost generation. She's going to explain it and I'm going to talk a little bit about it. This is as far back. You might not know anybody who was born between 1928 and 1944. But you get an idea of who these people were growing up after World War I. They were in this consciousness. World War I ended 1918 or 19. That's when they were born, right? Because that's why I was trying to do the math on my dad, who was born in 1918. So let's play this thing, which is a lovely thing put together by Of Wings and Things. This is a video project that this person did for her A-Push class. A-Push. I don't know what that means. On the lost generation. It's by no means professional, but I thought I'd post it so that other students could benefit from its information. Thank you very much. In 2012, this young person looked at a book that reflected the culture from after World War I, The Lost Generation. This is a good thing. You're going to hear about this. And wrote about it for whatever A push means, or A push class, American pop, and we'll figure that out later, or look it up on your interweb search. Here is, I don't know her name, Hemingway, okay, and it's a, and you're going to hear names you might have remembered or not, but you got to give this kudos, credits should be with a K now, so there'd be crudos, could be kudos and credits, could be crudos, we can make a word. For this, so I really got to hand it to this girl who did this, and she's a lovely, it is professional, it's very good. Here she is talking about a book called The Sun Also Rises, which exemplified and used its definition, was definitive about the lost generation, the trads. Here goes.
That old devil called love gets behind me.
The term The Lost Generation was created by Gertrude Stein and popularized by Ernest Hemingway as the epigraph of his book, The Sun Also Rises. During the speakeasy decade of the 1920s, America was coming of age, developing an identity that was caught between the old-fashioned values of immigrant fathers and the growing materialistic aspirations of a younger generation. This greatly affected the writers of The Lost Generation, including F. Scott Fitzgerald, T.S. Eliot, John Dos Passos, and of course, Ernest Hemingway. The Lost Generation was comprised of expatriates who spurned the pre-war values of love, romanticism, optimism, prosperity, and hope. They were also cynical of the glitter and potential of the great boom of the 1920s, which they now saw as American and money-based. And
now, I turned it. Hey, hold on. Hold on. I left my mic off there. I turned it because I just want to say something. As I said, I was going to interrupt it. Okay, so because already there's a plethora of information in there. First, as far as professionalism is concerned, I think the first mistake she made was not to use an instrumental behind her, because it was great opening with that particular song, but then she's talking and she's battling with the voice in the background, so we didn't get to hear a lot of what she said. Gertrude Stein was a writer in the 20s, and she coined the term the Lost Generation. Why were they considered lost? Let's hear her again. Why?
And the growing materialistic aspirations of a younger generation.
Nah.
This greatly affected the writers of The Lost Generation.
Yes.
Including F. Scott Fitzgerald, T.S. Eliot,
yeah.
John Dos Passos, and of course, Ernest Hemingway.
Of course.
The Lost Generation was comprised of expatriates who spurned the pre-war values of love, romanticism, optimism, prosperity, and hope.
Okay, and they were expatriates. This, of course, means what they did was they all left America. And they were, they're Americans, but they went, they live, and a lot of these writers all showed up in, actually in Paris is where they wound up. They went around here and there, and they were involved, and many of them were journalists and writing books later, because they were working, they worked with the, they were covering things over there. And so watching the world just fall apart again, the Spanish Revolution was a big event that many of them took to writing about and going out and doing it the way today is done with the, you name whoever it is, the guys you go out to Afghanistan, you see them on the news, guys and gals out there reporting from where, ISIS is fighting, whatever and whatever. Okay, so that's what they did, the Lost Generation. But it's important to know that they were, what did she say? They were what?
His book, The Sun Also Rises.
Yeah, right.
During the speakeasy decade of the 1920s, yeah. America was coming of age, developing an identity that was caught between the old-fashioned values of immigrant fathers and the growing materialistic aspirations of a younger generation.
Now, there you go. The older values, and does this sound familiar? Again, I haven't even gotten to the next generation after the Lost Generation, because the next generation, was not exactly they thought they were found. They just mis- okay. So the lost generation, they were the values of their parents. Does this sound familiar? Whatever generation you belong to, the values of their parents were tested and questioned. It was just not the same. See, with them, it was like, yeah, this is just not with us. It doesn't work that way. So they had an entirely different view than their parents.
This greatly affected the writers of The Lost Generation.
It greatly affected them as they were writing about it because they had nothing else the hell to do. So they got jobs. It's not like they just went out and wrote novels and everybody started to buy them. Indeed not. She's talking about The Sun Also Rises. The characters in that book come about, they're created by people, by Hemingway, to represent people of the lost generation, okay? So the people and the characters around them. This is, now here's a book nobody rewrote. The Sun Also Rises. Now forget about, even if you don't know about it, forget about the style, because this book is revolutionary in a certain way of writing. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about the cultural aspect, the fact that Hemingway writes about the people he knows and he's with and his generation, the lost generation. They're called lost because they don't know what the hell to do, because the values of the generation before them are so different. Does this sound hello? Hello? That's one of those stupid things. Hello? Are you listening? Does it sound familiar? Okay, we're going to go on.
Including F. Scott Fitzgerald, T.S. Eliot, John Dos Passos, and of course, Ernest Hemingway. The Lost Generation was comprised of expatriates who spurned the pre-war values of love, romanticism, optimism, prosperity, and hope. They were also cynical of the glitter and potential of the great boom of the 1920s, which they now saw as American and money-based, and therefore corrupt and insincere.
Oh, do you hear that one? They found it corrupt and insincere. Hello, here we go. Knocking on the door of the generation. You know, we could skip a couple of generations, and you find this right now as a current, think about this, for people who don't, people now who are young, that's why I love this girl who did this, because she went into history, and she probably understands today a lot better than a lot of people, because why? Well, because she's looked back and said, hey, look, this thing happened before, because don't, the situation the world is in right now, based on these values, the values that have been created progressed, and a lot of people are saying no, we want something new, we want something different, or we want same crap. It just has, it's the play with a different set. Go on.
Unable to reconcile themselves with their past beliefs and unwilling to accept those of their present mainstream society, the lost generation was left morally bankrupt and spiritually sterile.
Morally bankrupt and spiritually sterile. Let's hear it again. Morally bankrupt and spiritually sterile. Now, we're hearing that everywhere. If you're living in today's generation, don't think this is anything new. This is my point. Right? Because here it goes again. Go on.
With only the fleeting pleasures of alcohol and sexual promiscuity.
Hello, how about this? Alcohol and sexual promiscuity. Now, if you take alcohol, okay, and you transfer it to drugs, and certainly these days in the Y2K plus 17, the opioid problem that is sweeping through a particular generation, right? Okay. Spawning from the same attitudes. Another lost generation. Go on, girl.
As comfort.
Might as well give up the fight.
As comfort.
A serious writer is not to be confounded with a solemn writer. A serious writer may be a hawk or a buzzard or even a popinjay, but a solemn writer is always a bloody owl.
Ernest Hemingway, perhaps the most famous writer of the lost generation, popularized the term in his critically acclaimed book, The Sun Also Rises. The Sun Also Rises gave him international success and cemented him as a leader of the Lost Generation.
Let me tell you that Hemingway, if I haven't told you this before, it's a little history now, had any number of titles for The Sun Also Rises. Now, let's not go back and make fun, as I did. What was the second book in this series? The Sun Also Rises, what? Neptune Orbits. No, okay, I'm not going to do that now with this. My point being that he had any number of titles for the book, but eventually used this title as, in those days, and it's still done today, you know, the Bible, the St. James Bible in English, not the Latin thing that we don't understand unless you do Latin. Who talks Latin anymore? Speaks Latin, not talks. You don't talk, and you speak it. He, like, and people, writers do this, they look through the Bible for, because there's many things in there that work as titles, and he cut off something from the Bible, you know, day goes in and day goes out. Things, you know, continue to move, and, you know, one generation leads to another, begat, whatever, like that, and the sun also rises, the sun keeps coming up. So use that, because, in essence, he was really saying, this isn't going to change. This is just going to go over and over. This is what happens to every generation, okay, which is amazing because he was almost predicting that there, too. So he wrote this book, and everybody started to read it.
Many of his books became Bibles for people who felt disillusioned with society and culture in the 20s.
Okay, and many of his books became Bibles. I used this book, Bibles. She used the word Bibles, of course, as a, I guess, as a... It's a metaphor, for, you know, because that book was my Bible. You know, I went by that book. I lived by that book. And they, but she's right. Many of his books for people who were disillusioned. What did she say exactly? People who were disillusioned. Let's get it again. But what did you say?
The Sun Also Rises.
Yeah.
The Sun Also Rises gave him international success and cemented him as a leader of the Lost Generation.
Back too far.
Many of his books became Bibles for people who felt disillusioned with society and culture in the 20s.
Disillusioned from about society and what was the second one she said? Oh, God, why can't I remember? Disillusioned.
His books became Bibles for people who felt disillusioned with society and culture in the 20s.
Disillusioned of the science. Of the culture of the 20s. So you could see this is happening today, too. Though I can't seem to put my finger on exactly what that means. But disillusionment is the deal. Disillusionment, disappointment, because there are expectations that leads to people coming to exactly where we are today in the world. Go on, girl.
Themes in his books, including alienation, moral decay, and detachment, reflected the attitudes of the time.
Now, he was not exactly a man who was, you know, practicing. It was moral decay was just was one of his things. And but a person who writes has to, you know, Hemingway said, someone said, you know how to write. You just get. And at that time it was typewriters. You just go to the typewriter and you bleed. That was his idea of writing. So even though he made sentences simpler for everybody to read, that's not the point. The point is you put yourself on your blood. You're on the paper. And you're this, you know, honest and soulful expression. But moral decay, yeah, okay. He wrote about moral decay because he knew about moral decay. And it hasn't changed much. Go. We're right.
During his life, Hemingway published 7 novels, 6 short story collections, and 2 nonfiction works. In 1954, he won the Nobel Prize in Literature.
Yeah.
His time spent fighting in World War I greatly affected his writing and formed the basis of his book, A Farewell to Arms. In this novel, he wrote of war, that it breaks everyone, and afterward, many are strong in the broken places.
It breaks everyone, but many are strong in the broken places. Ooh, that's writing, isn't it? Ooh, that's writing. Very simple sentence, too. Mr. Ernest Hemingway, ladies and gentlemen. Not exactly somebody you would model your life after, and anyway. The trads gave birth. These are the trads. Now, you think these guys had problems. These, okay, let's see, let's go beyond and see where she goes from here. She's talking about other books too. Let's see where she goes. The Fitzgeralds!
Fitzgerald wrote many short stories and novels which treated the themes of youth and promise, along with despair and age, prevalent in the 20s, or as he called them, the Jazz Age. He wrote four novels during his life, This Side of Paradise, Tender is the Night, The Beautiful and the Damned, and his most famous work, The Great Gatsby.
The Great Gatsby.
Fitzgerald was critical of the 20s and attempted to define the era through his works. Fitzgerald's view of the 20s was serious and complex, for he recognized the glamour as well as the waste, the charm as well as the self-destruction. Many of his novels included the corrosive effects of wealth and a decadent lifestyle, egoism and self-confidence, and alcoholism. Scott Fitzgerald was also a member of the Lost Generation. He succumbed to the alcoholism prominent among the expatriates of the group, and his writing reflected the immorality and aimlessness of the Lost Generation post-World War I.
Yeah.
Fitzgerald became very close friends with Ernest Hemingway, arguably the leader of the Lost Generation. Their relationship suffered many ups and downs, and eventually ended in bitter resentment.
Yeah.
Fitzgerald died in 1940 at the age of 44.
44. She needed a sound mixer in that thing. I shouldn't find the flaws. It's a beautiful little piece. And she's doing a good job. I'm watching the pictures, so there are pictures of these people too. Anyway, go on.
Many critics have said that the novel that he was working on when he died, The Love of the Last Tycoon, if finished, would have been his greatest work.
Yeah, maybe. Sinclair Lewis. Uh-oh, here we go.
Sinclair Lewis was the first writer from the United States to earn a Nobel Prize in Literature in 1930. The author of novels, short stories, and plays, Lewis wrote critically about American society, capitalism, fascism, and modern women in the workplace.
Now, Sinclair Lewis, I'm not mistaken, there is one of his books. I have to look this up. I think it was Sinclair Lewis. There's a book that people started to read again because when Donald Trump was elected president, there were similarities, and a book Sinclair Lewis wrote called It Can't Happen Here. Now, I could check that, or you could check that. I'm not going to open up. Should I open up? No, I'm not going to go searching for it now. I believe it was him. But it certainly fits into what she's talking about, are the themes of Sinclair Lewis.
He was born in the village of Sauk Center, Minnesota, and then later accepted to Yale, where he was recognized as a talented writer.
Yeah.
His great success came when he wrote a novel about small-town life called Main Street.
Main Street.
His next novel, Babbitt, satirized the American commercial culture and boosterism. Hmm. His other novels would carry the same themes of hypocrisy and the pointlessness of American society, particularly the wealthy.
Oh, the pointlessness. Oh, are you listening to this? She has done such research and such a wonderful, I hope she takes this with her through her life. Maybe she's going to be a writer. I don't know. What else you got?
A raging alcoholic, Lewis was even checked into a psychiatric hospital for treatment after a serious binge in 1937.
Oh, yeah, they were tough.
He was, in fact, killed by his addiction, dying in Rome in 1951. At the age of 65.
H.L. Mencken.
A cynic is a man who, when he smells flowers.
H.L. Mencken was an American journalist, essayist, magazine editor, satirist, and an outspoken critic of American life and culture.
Yeah.
He openly admired Nietzsche and was critical of representative democracy.
Nietzsche.
He also sympathized with Germany in World War I. But during World War II, referred to Hitler and the Nazis as ignorant thugs.
Ignorant thugs! The Nazis! said the intellect, the writer. You hear that, thugs? Do you hear that? Why don't you look up that? Okay. I don't think I have to say any more about that right now.
He commented widely on the social scene, literature, music, prominent politicians, pseudo-experts, temperance, and uplifters. An ardent proponent of scientific progress, he was very skeptical of economic theories, and particularly critical of anti-intellectualism, bigotry, populism, Christian fundamentalism, creationism, organized religion, and the existence of God.
Okay, so we put all that together, and we have a lot of the things that he's criticizing these things, and these things are being criticized today because they still exist and are getting even more popular. We need another H.L. Mencken. May I sign up for this, please? Well, okay. So, you see what we're saying? You see what I'm saying? See what they're saying? See what she's saying? And I'm a baby boomer. She's not. I wonder. Well, she sounds like she's a Generation Y.
He is widely known for writing The American Language, a multi-volume study of how the English language is spoken in the United States.
Yes!
And for his satirical reporting on the Scopes Trial, which he named the Monkey Trial.
Yeah.
As a nationally syndicated columnist and book author, he is famously outspoken against Christian Science, social stigma, fakery, Christian radicalism, religious belief, anti-evolutionism, and the ignorant middle class.
The ignorant middle class. The ignorant middle class. All you have to do is find these people in other generations who have talked about the things that people are talking about in this generation. I don't mean generation like people. What I'm saying is their generation were commenting in literature and in culture on the same things that are being right now debated. And a lot of the people who are involved now in these things are not looking back and seeing this is just a cycle? Maybe.
His fearlessly frank and critical judgments about society.
By the way, that's not me. Fearlessly frank. That was she's still talking about Mencken.
Garnered him much attention. Literary critic Edmund Wilson said the striking thing about Mencken's mind is its ruthlessness and rigidity. Though one of the fairest of critics, he is the least pliant. In spite of his skepticism and his frequent exhortations to hold his opinion lightly, he himself has been conspicuous for seizing upon simple dogmas and sticking to them with fierce tenacity. True skeptics see both truth and weaknesses in every case.
True skeptics see truth. You hear that? Oh, boy. Weird times then, too. Huh? Go ahead. Finish up.
In his capacity as editor and man of ideas,
Mencken
became close friends with the leading literary figures of the Lost Generation, including F. Scott Fitzgerald and Sinclair Lewis.
Thank you. Starring, here's her name. Let's give it to her. Oh, I don't know. Indigo Muthra as Ernest Hemingway. Katie Woolard, Lisa France, Madison Zavlav, video editing. Oh my goodness, editing is spelled incorrectly by Lisa France. These are young kids though. Let's give them a little bit of slack. Music and voiceovers, Madison Zaslav. That's her. Madison Zaslav. Okay, these kids did a great job considering, right? They're young. That's it. Okay, thanks for watching. You are quite welcome, dear. You guys did a great job editing. Although, you know, you need to do some... they were trying to make a point. It was a project done for school. You got to give it credit. You can't look at it and say, hey, listen, why didn't you produce that as well as Federico Fellini? And it's not going to be done, you know? Okay, goodbye. Now, that's the Lost Generation. And I think that, World War I was called the war to end all wars. And at the time, it was the war to end all wars. It was a whoa. Did you hear that? That was one of those mental take a breaths. Oh. And that was, these people lost, and translating their feelings, their emotions, into a description of their culture, which became these books that are now classics. But not rewritten, I may add. And yet, you could write about the lost generation now. And if you think about other, now let's, you know, the baby boomers, and I don't have a little documentary at all. I don't have a big documentary, a little documentary or anything. Just my memory, because I grew up with baby boomers. And who were the voices there? And what was it based upon? Well, you know, a lot of it was based upon the same rebellious and misdirected values and questioning of values that was happening back then. It was just, you know, and the same thing. These people, as she said, Mariana Zalova, I forgot her name already. She's talking about these people like, you know, who are drinking. They're using alcohol and sex unbelievably out of this world. They're just gone. One of them, as you saw, wasn't Fitzgerald's one after, you know, it wasn't Mencken, but the one before Mencken, who I forgot. Gatsby guy, Fitzgerald. But anyway, they all just drank themselves, smoked themselves, and sexed themselves to death. All of them. And the most of them died pretty young. There are other ones, and but they're not from the lost generation. People like Henry Miller. And that particular area is another area. It's a different area. Okay. And yet, the similar expatriate and American values that questioning, you know, the Christian moral moving functional, that stuff, birthism and all that stuff that is garbage. And I got editorial. Am I supposed to be just a professor? The love of science and not of, you know, religion and all the traditional stuff that is the trads. The trads began to break down. They became they spawned the lost generation. The lost generation moves on, and of course here come the baby boomers after the Second World War, which was a war that ended, being the war that ended all wars. Because remember, the Second World War ends definitively with the atomic age, atom bombs, two, the only ones ever dropped in a conflagration. And then hundreds have been tested, but, you know, not used. And they get bigger and bigger. We all know that. And then, of course, recently here in the Y2K plus 17, we, you know, this whole thing with North Korea. They want bombs. We want big bombs like you guys got. We want big bombs. Everyone wants big bombs. They've got bombs. Who has bombs? A lot of us. Pakistan has bombs. India? India has a nuclear arsenal? Isn't that weird? Today another movie was on. It was Gandhi, the story of Gandhi. Now, do you think that when Gandhi was out there starving to death and saying, we are not going to win our freedom from the British violently. Now, no guns, no fighting, and these people were mowed down by the British because they sat there and you shouldn't be sitting there, all you people, and you belong to us, because the British Empire, they were really tough. They were tough, those British. Yeah, now we're allies and everything, okay, and World War II and World War, yeah, I know, but way back, you know, I told you about those Shakespearean days, okay, the British were tough. And they wanted India. Why would they want India? Because the sun also rises, but it should never set on the British Empire. As it said once, empire. Using the word empire immediately tells you there's something possessive and not very democratic or republicanic, whatever. There's not a republic, so not involved. Republics, remember, republics were created by the Romans. And even in a republic, people got persecuted and, Ay, ay, ay. Mankind. Give me a break. Poised. Poised. India frees itself from the British Empire from a former soldier, Mahatma Gandhi. Gandhi, who is, hello, assassinated. That sound familiar? Because that was a while back. Does that sound familiar? Assassination that goes through all the generations. Gandhi helps free the Indians, and I don't mean, I mean Indians, real Indians from India. That's why you're an Indian. Not like this dumb Columbus guy. I'm in the West Indies. They're Indians. They're not Indians. Indians are Indians. Indians are Indians. That's the name of my new book. That means that, you know, Indians are not Indians. They're Indians. So now today, this is what I'm saying. This is what I'm getting to here by this one. Today, India freed through a program and a process of nonviolence led by Mahatma Gandhi. Today, India has a nuclear arsenal. And what? They need to protect themselves with nuclear bombs just in case. Okay? I'm telling you. This is yeah, mankind. You just can't get enough of it, can you? And I'm not going to go into baby boomers. I'm making the case from the foundation. And I think if we went back even further in this line, what would that be? People born from the teens into the 28s, that would be, no, the generation before. What are they doing anyway? They're doing every nine years? We could do the math on this thing. Yeah, can we? I don't know. The way I do math, when I incorrectly subtract. So if we go here, let's say here from 1944, 1928. I'll do this here really quickly, okay? 4 to a 3, and that's 1. 8, 9, 6, and 1. 16, every 16 years we're going to do it? Okay, 16 years. So we want what? We want 1928 minus the 16 years. We're going to have to make up a name. We don't know. 1912. 1912 would be what? Would these be the turn of the century people? 1912. What we call them? Centurions? What do we call these people? That would be the other generation. So that's, let's go A generation. Would be 1912. Now you take 1912 and you, subtract 16 from it. We'll give you 16. 0, 1, 6 and 6 is 12, 9, 8, and that's 10, 1 and 9, and we get to 1896. That generation is the B generation. I'm making this up. I'm creating this so that we can go back. You could go back each 16 years before each, find the generation. That's 16 years when a bunch of people are born, I guess. And they, right? Is that how that works? And you go back and you see how culture changes. You see how the progression of government and I could do this in any country. Of course, I'm doing it based on the United States, Canada, North America. which is the United States and Canada. Thank you very much. It fits there. By the way, I haven't mentioned this recently because we've been talking, or I've been talking a lot. And I know you've been talking to me. My name is Frank Cotullo, the man whose name adorns the title of the show, which is only another 15 minutes until we're done with this one. Here, Y2K plus 17. And the man whose name adorns the title of the show. The show is Cotullo Chronicles, and I'm chronicling. Now, if this has... Yes?
You have mail.
Yeah, I guess it's probably garbage at this time of night. Yeah. All right, I'm not being sick because I don't want to judge the poor person. Tell him, that's garbage. Don't tell me that stuff. Every generation is a lost generation. I guess if you wanted to put this into some context, The lost generation is never found, because every generation is lost because it has to find its own way. And usually because technology and culture changes per generation, so, and that's what you grow up living and understanding through. Communications change just as it has over these years. And a lot of you people who are old, like you baby boomers, who have now lived through, as I have, and this is from the beginning of what I was talking about, we lived through Generation X. After us, and boy, we were a mess. I don't care what anybody says, but I'm not going to go through that show. I'm just, that's an editorial thing, okay? My generation, lost. Completely lost. And the real problem with them is they thought they were found. That's the real problem. A lost generation thinks they're found, and therefore they've fixed it all up. And now they could move on into a new, they could pioneer into a new territory of, no, it's not new. And then it's like, what do they wind up doing? We're free. We're new. We've got that. And they move on, and then they turn into nothing. And they sell out. They don't take those, the great deal of them, you know. And then by doing that, they bring with them resentment and what they, and then they start resenting the generations that are spawning, that they are spawning. See, without realizing those people are lost too. Values are changing. Morals are changing. Just the way they were when that generation became lost. There must have been, I would say, like, you know, a lot of the 1800s, let's say, I wonder if I'm not an historian, so I don't, I'm just, you know, I'm thinking this through, just the way I'm thinking it through with you. But in the 1800s, you know, the Industrial Revolution, that was changed, I don't know when that was around there, so that changed things, right? As in machines changed things. It was radical change. In culture and morals and everything. But the changes became greater and faster, more quickly. And so the generations falling into the next generation fell into a world that was created in less time. Okay. They fell into a world, a presence, a consciousness that took less time than the generation before it. Now, if you want to go and read a great book, as I mentioned to you many times, if you listened to it and heard me, I say it again. Alvin Toffler's book, Future Shock, is revolutionary in how it shows that the speed in which technical things and, machines and digital science, let's say science, it moves so quickly, which much more quickly in one generation than it did three generations ago. So my grandfather, let's say, and I am saying it, my grandfather is, when he dies in the 70s, he's 80 years old. In the 70s, he's 80 years old, which means he's born in the, 1820. I got to do more math. Oh, yikes. You know what I'm talking about? The point is that he sees an aeroplane. He grows up, and he sees an aeroplane. Man's flying now. Okay? It takes forever, if you think about the time it took from man being born caveman to the time that someone invented a way to fly. That took forever. So when he's growing, he finds an airplane now, but the time it takes from there to be an airplane, a man flies, to the time that a jet airplane, a man's flying and breaking the speed of sound, is so short compared to the time before that. This is another reason why colleges don't hire me to teach this stuff, because the way I'm explaining it, I'm doing my best. We're talking. You're among friends. I am. I know that. So people, and especially my generation, because they're just too, they're so melancholy, you know, that they can't I don't want to go into that. I'm telling you this. I'm a baby boomer. Okay? And I go through, as you baby boomers do, go through Generation X. You may have even married people or been with people who are younger, some of the Generation X. Okay? Then we go through Generation Y. That's up to 94. We're headed to the millennium, right? Because we're born around the middle of the century, since like 45 to 50. Well, in this case, baby boomers until 64. And we get to witness and see, but not, and you should have participated. I know I did. Generation X, then Generation Y. People born in 1994 see Generation Z, which starts in 1995. Some of these numbers are screwy. Who makes this stuff up? Who does this? You know, when you start looking at this stuff on the internet, as I said, you got to do a lot of research. I refuse to do it because I'm trying to make some points by just saying, because I'm not teaching this and I'm not writing about this per se. I'm just saying that I'm aware. I got enough information to be aware of those other generations and the fact that I lived through them and I see them, and I have to understand that they're in a different consciousness. I have to understand that they too are lost. I never left. But that's different. I don't want to talk about me per se. I'm talking about the group, the entire generation. And all of these generations, I've lived through a lot of generations, and more are coming. You ready for this? I spawned a Generation Y baby child and a Generation Z. I am the father of a Generation Y and a Generation Z person, human being. and they are separated by how many, and this is a little different with a lot of people in my generation because I had children so late in life. So I am 30 years, a little more than 30 years older than my first child. Now, what am I talking about now? Here I go with my math again. Point is, okay, in 1993, I'm 53. Is that right? Is that right? I'm 43. I'm 43. I'm not 50 until 2000. Oh, yay. That's how many years are there, and I'm lost. Okay, so I'm 50 years. I'm 50 years. No, I'm not 50 years older. Yes. You see what I'm saying? I am so many generations older than my children. I have to understand my children, and I try to tell them and teach them what I've learned from all the generations, including mine. Because I don't want them to just grow up as if that's only what happened. And that's a problem a lot of generations have. This is what happened. And you say, that's what happened. That didn't happen to you. Well, no, something else happened to them, the next generation. And you have to understand what happened to them. And they have to understand, and the similarities are the key to what is important. The similarities. Okay? So is it much different? I ask you, my friends, and you are my friends. I just erased something I didn't need to, because I'm getting close to the end of this thing. Hi. My name is Frank Catola, man whose name adorns the title of the show. I'll find the thing I need to put here, and then get it. But you know this, so I guess I'm saying, understanding. No, stop. Thing under that, we need to look at the similarities of the challenges and the problems that, generations have, and you'll see it. It's the same junk. And then perhaps that could make things a little bit easier for all of us. I echo all the notes from that show, this show, as I move on. And I move on. My name is Frank Catola, man's name is doing the title of the show. Next week, still August, and, I hope to have another guest, because there are people, I think, Heather Drain, I believe, maybe coming on to the show. We'll be talking about some other stuff. Tonight's guest never showed up, but that's okay. I decided to talk about this, and I did, and we got to hear a lovely... I just encourage you to, people who are younger and you who are older. The ones who are older need to look at the generations that they don't understand, and the ones that are younger need to look back, as that girl did in The Lost Generation, and understand that. You need to do a little bit of work. It's not very difficult. Just do it, and you'll understand a little bit more what's going on everywhere. My name is Frank Catola, man whose name adorns the title of the show. Catola Chronicles. It's what I do here. Catola Chronicles. Now, there you go. Put it down. Hey, yeah. Practically took a generation to explain all that or go into it. It's a drum solo show. What do you want from me? My name is Frank Tolman. Okay, here's what you do. Have fun. Watch after yourself. Eat a lot of lettuce. That's good for you, lettuce. Say hello to all my friends who know me out there. Go to CatolaChronicles.blogspot.com. Go to Facebook. Find out everything you possibly need to know. You don't need to know any of it. You may want to know. So find out what you want to know. Just look at a whole bunch. And don't believe everything you hear, say, or read, okay? Look into it. We'll see you next time. Hopefully everything will work out, and we'll be here, and you'll be there, and we'll all be together, okay? Go buy books. Go do what you got to do, all right? I'm gonna leave you now. Good night, Mrs. Ernstweil, wherever you may be located. I am the Bard of Broadcasting. And I have nothing more to say.